The following is a segment from the Education Gadfly Show. Visit edexcellence.net to listen to full episodes or to sign up for the print edition of the Education Gadfly. For quicker delivery of the podcast, subscribe to us on iTunes.
Danielle, should we play some Pardon the Gadfly?
On that note, I'll ask you guys some questions about the things you know.
Okay, well, sort of.
It's going to be a very small question set.
Yeah, exactly.
This week, Fordham released its latest, Do High Flyers Maintain Their Altitude? The Performance of High Achievers. And National Affairs released a big article by Rick arguing that our obsession with closing achievement gaps has been misguided. A coincidence or a conspiracy?
Oh.
Well, I'm sure what we know will be said by some of our friends on the a gap closing bus.
Yes, which is what?
This was all carefully orchestrated.
Yes, exactly. And there's a Jay Green study coming soon that will also show that our highest performing districts are not internationally competitive. So this is just like all around. It is a conspiracy.
What it really shows is just that we are so slow that it takes us a decade to get around to actually starting to meaningful challenge when we overshoot on these things.
All right. So what our study shows is we track individual students over time. This is using the NWEA assessment. And it shows that, for example, kids that are in third grade and are high performing at the 90th percentile or above, that a lot of them by the eighth grade are no longer high performing at the 90th percentile or above, that they drop out of this high performing status. And it's quite a few. In some categories, it's close to half the kids. Hard to know what to make of that, whether you'd expect more or less. Seems like a lot to us. You also have some evidence that in reading, particularly middle school to high school reading, you see the high performers totally stagnating while the low performers keep making progress. Some people say, hey, great, that's closing the achievement gap. I would say, hey, what are we doing that's slowing down the progress of our high achievers?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's your argument over there in National Affairs?
It's broader. I say, look... achievement gap, what I call achievement gap mania, is fine as far as it goes. Focusing resources and energy on the worst served kids makes sense. Nobody's got any obvious problem with that. The real danger has been that the champions of this stuff on both sides of the aisle have made it more or less impossible in the last decade for people to talk about any of the other kids other than those at the bottom of the achievement gaps. This is all the funders want to focus on. It's all the charters emphasize. It's all state accountability systems emphasize and reward upon. And so what's happened is we've created an environment where all we talk about, all we research, all we study, all we intervene upon is reading and math performance for the lowest performing, for low performing disadvantaged kids. And the result is the kinds of results that your study at FLAG this week have simply, we haven't done this kind of research. We haven't actually wrestled with the implications of these kinds of trade-offs. And we haven't been honest about the fact that when we make these decisions, some kids are going to lose out as we direct our attention on other kids.
But the other side, say Education Trust or others, will say, no, let's talk of trade-offs. There's no reason we can't walk and chew gum at the same time. We can lift the achievement of all kids.
Yeah, and I mean, so a lot of the article is walking through the reams of evidence that we actually can't.
That there are trade-offs.
That there's limited resources. There's limited instructional energy. There's limited time.
Look, and I think, there's the policy stuff, but I think at the end of the day, it's also what's happening within schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, around grouping, the war against tracking, which was understandable. There were kids, especially poor minority kids, in tracks to nowhere, getting nothing, and blowing that up made sense. But what we have now is an ideology that says we should always have heterogeneous grouping. Other two otherwise is elitist or classist or racist, and what do you know? There are trade-offs that might be good for the low-achieving kids, but the high-achieving kids are bored silly.
Well, the third word there is the payoff word. To challenge the gap-closing emphasis has been to be attacked as racist for the better part of the past decade.
Right.
And that has made it incredibly hard to have any serious debate about how do we structure programs? How do we serve kids? I got to say, I mean, I think this is one reason why NCLB so thoroughly unraveled. Both as a policy consensus, but also as a political project, that all these suburban communities, which are seeing their property values slammed and are seeing their schools really emphasize serving just a wedge of kids who are not making AYP, who are stopping the schools from making AYP, those parents, these middle class, these suburban parents are saying, this isn't about my kid. And that's not how you maintain a coalition when it comes to American social policy.